if you are in this situation, especially as a new parent or thinking about parenting, and you look at your work day or your work week or month and you can't step away, I would say that's a really good indication of like figure out systems or structures or changes that need to be put in place so that you can.
Welcome to Developing Leadership, the podcast for engineering leaders where Isel Kent and Jason Warner share their lessons on the ins and outs of managing software teams. Today we have Allison McMillan on the podcast. Allison is the VP of Engineering at QuotaPath and joins us to talk about the transformation engineering leaders go through when they become parents. Jason and Allison take us through the ups and downs of parenthood and how getting pushed out of your comfort zone makes you a better leader. They also shared communication tips and parallels between parenting and managing. For example, did you know understanding babies is like debugging in real time? Me neither. As always, this episode comes with accompanying show notes, with a deep dive into the main topics, mental models, and key moments from the episode. Find them at developingleadership.co and linked in the episode description.
Developing Leadership.
Hey everyone, welcome back to yet another episode of Developing Leadership. Jason and I have with us a special guest, Allison McMillan, the VP of Engineering at QuotaPath. Allison, you and I had a really great chat the other day where you brought up a topic that I have to admit I had never thought of before, but since I've probably referenced in maybe a dozen or so meetings, which is how you change as a leader, and in this case, of course, in our context of our podcast as an engineering leader, once you become a parent. And I know, Jason, you have some interesting things to say on this today as well. For those of you listening, I am not a parent, although I definitely feel about our golden retriever like one, but I don't think that counts. And the lessons that's taught me, I think, are very different. But I'd love for you to maybe take us off here, Allison, and talk a bit about how that experience impacted you and changed you in your professional life.
Yeah, happy to. So parenting is like the best and worst job in the whole entire world, right? It's like you have crafted this human. They're like you think of them as like this blank slate that you're helping, you're giving them knowledge, you're helping them figure out like how to communicate in the world, how to be a human by themselves with other people. So that's like amazing, right? And it's so interesting to see parts of yourself in this other human being that is also just out there existing in the world. And it's also the worst, right? For a while, I had a podcast about being a parent in tech, and the number of times that the phrase, I love my children, but, or I love my child, but, multiple times every single episode. And the reason is that they just put you in these ridiculous situations and predicaments and scenarios that you're like, how do I handle this? What do I do here? What's the right approach? What is going to be helpful is not going, like, the extent to, is this a little deal? Is this a big deal? Do you have a conversation? Is it a disciplinary thing? There's just all these different things you have to think about, often immediately, like right in the situation. Sometimes you have a little bit of space, but I joke that my son likes to ask me these like really big, important questions about the world, like when we're driving in the car. One time he asked me why people need to pay for things that they need in life. And I was like, oh, this is okay. And we're driving and I'm driving and I'm thinking and I'm right. But the point is that they push you out of your comfort zone all the time. And I think that as an engineering leader and as a manager, the more that you can get pushed out of your comfort zone, the better that you are at dealing with different people, different situations, different types of people. And there's nothing that does that better than having children.
I love this. Before I'm going to deep dive on about 5 different parts of that, Allison, and it is, I must say, driving in the car is both the worst and the best place to have deep conversations. Jason, I'd love to get your perspective here as well, because I know it's for you also been a very impactful.
Yeah. So it, obviously kids are, they change a lot of things about your life. One of the things I actually believe is that the more people that you interact with, the more information, ideas you get to exchange and things of that nature. However, we as humans are very susceptible to the concept of the more time you spend with an individual, the more they shape you. And there's that concept of the 5 closest people to you shape a lot of your personality and stuff like that. At the end of the day, what management is, what parenting is, all those sorts of things are, you're trying to get the best outcomes in whatever the situation is, and you're trying to do it for or with other people. And it's strange because parenting is a very specific version of this. You've created this human, you're trying to set them up for life in a way, but you also have to be a parent and a collaborator and a teacher and a friend and a confidant. And as they age, all of those things, the percentage you're supposed to be doing, which change, and they change dramatically pretty quickly in certain scenarios. And at some point you have to stop being a parent and you have to say, here, I'm enabling you to make some mistakes and I'm just trying to set up guardrails. It's a very weird overall thing if you actually sit back and think about what it is. And if you care nothing about the relationship, and I think this is where it actually gets really important. If you care nothing about the relationship that you have with your kids, parenting is actually straightforward. It's super dictatorial, super totalitarian. You can just say whatever you want to get done. But if you care about the relationship and the long-term relationship with your children, it's a very different thing. So I relate this to engineering management and management in general, which is ultimately as a business, you're trying to achieve an outcome with other people. And if you don't care at all about the person or all of the people inside your organization, it's actually pretty straightforward. You do the Elon Musk stuff. It's super straightforward. You just like totally burn out other people and grind them to all, you know, depth that you want to. And no, don't worry about what happens to anybody as long as your outcome is achieved. Now, that's not what most people want to do. That's not actually how a lot of people believe it should be. And I'll say one other thing too, is I think that I became a much better manager, much better when I had kids. And the reason why is because I read lots of books about becoming a parent. And what those books centered on was a lot about how you give and take, collaboration, communication, the information exchange, all that. And I think that I achieved another level up when I became a parent of an autistic child. When I found out that my son was autistic, I read all of the autism books. And all the autism books basically are about communication. That my sons, or all autistic kids on the spectrum, have very different ways of communicating. And you have to learn and see and exchange that. And so now is that I have three kids and all three of my kids are special needs and they're special needs in different ways. I feel like I know almost every trick in the book, or at least every trick in the book that works for my kids and things of that nature. And I think those two things leveled me up throughout my career in various ways that are very hard to articulate, but at the same time, I fully understand them myself.
I was just going to say, I have a theory that if you like the top or most common management books and the top or most common parenting books, and you boil down, okay, what are the five main lessons that each of these books are teaching? There is basically identical overlap, just the examples and the situations that are provided to make it like real life applicable. That's where the difference is. But when you boil it down, I feel like for most of them, you can just lay them on top of each other and it is the same message.
So I want to get into the special tricks, because I don't think I've ever shared this, but my mother's a therapist. And so I grew up in a way that every situation would get analyzed. And I was bullied a lot as a kid. I had a very, very, I got to a point where I was like scared of speaking to other humans, level of bullied when I was younger. And my mother would analyze every situation that would occur, and from exactly like, why is this happening, and communication and things like that. So there, I realize still to this day that pretty much how I am as a leader or as a manager, I credit 95% to her. And it's definitely a lot of those tricks and how you think through things and how you communicate. So let's start with you maybe here, Allison. What are some of those tricks and very tactical things that you learned about communicating that someone listening to this today can use tomorrow in a meeting?
One that comes to mind immediately is validating concerns and feelings and recognizing the level of importance something has to an individual, even if it is different than what you assume or what you think that like level of importance should be. And so this is really clear with kids, right? Especially I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, so especially as they're in that younger group. But even with my older one, and still like there are things that are really important to them, like a box that they collected or how we get out of the house in the morning. There's a whole, like the things that little kids, there's a running joke that's my toddler is crying because, and there's a whole huge variety of reasons, right? Cut the grilled cheese wrong or whatever it is. But I used to be really frustrated. I'd be like, who cares how the grilled cheese is cut? This is not a big deal. But in the grand scheme of their life as somebody who's 3 years old, it actually is a big deal. Like it is one of the biggest things that maybe has happened to them to date. And it's maybe helping to create like context or providing more information, or be like, okay, this time we did it this way. Next time we can do it differently. I can ask you next time how you like grilled cheese to be cut. We're both learning here, right? So, but validating their concern and not being like, I don't understand why you're crying about grilled cheese. This is like a really small deal, but asking and being like, okay, why does this feel like a big deal? What can we do next time? How can we move past this current situation? And those are the same things, right? Like reorgs, or there's a whole host of changes in or is working on a piece of code for a really long time, and then business direction, company direction changes, and that product is no longer going to be pursued, right? Those are like really frustrating frustrating experiences. And as somebody in leadership, you probably have a little bit more context as to what's going on. And so having the conversation with the manager, with the individual, asking more questions, validating those feelings and figuring out like, what can we do differently next time? What could this look like next time that would be helpful for you?
I love this, Allison. I want to throw something to you because I had a meeting maybe 2 hours ago, not even, and I ended up tearing up in this meeting. And it's quite rare for me to tear up in meetings, nothing against crying at all. But it was because my current head of product started with me as an intern almost 6 years ago, directly out of a mathematics degree, and then ended up becoming a machine learning intern and is now product engineering leader 6 years later. And he met his partner at that time at our previous company, and he's about to have a baby. Like, we're a month away. And so to me, it's of course, like, it's here because it's a very full circle moment of mentoring someone and going from intern to them seeing them become a father. What is it, and I didn't expect we'd go chronological here, but what is it from the very early parts of like, you're having your first child, you're having a baby right before you, where communication is not even communication yet. What is it from that somebody that really impacted you? And where are there lessons to be learned there that you apply with your colleagues at work?
Oh man, from the baby stage, I think, okay, so both of my children were challenging babies. When I mentioned to my children, oh, so-and-so had a baby, and we talk about when they were babies, my daughter goes, oh, was I the one that didn't sleep or the one that didn't eat? And in those first few months, you're in a little bit of survival mode. And so I think that the thing that you learn a little bit, or that I like felt like I constantly told myself, was like, we're doing okay. Especially when I had my first, I was like, you're new. Literally tell Devin as a baby when he was crying, I would be like, we're going to be fine. You're new to this. I'm new to this. We're both learning things together. We're both going to learn so much in the next few months, and we're both okay. I think that's like one of the most important messages, especially in those early stages before there's talking, before there's communication, before you figure out like what each cry means. And actually with my son, I never figured it out. With my daughter, I could figure it out a little bit better, but I would have people that would be like, oh, you don't know the difference between their I'm tired cry and I'm hungry cry. And I was like, I don't know the difference between those two cries. The baby's just screaming. Like, so it was really just telling myself. And sometimes in like management roles and leadership roles as well, right? Like in new situations, you just have to tell like yourself and your team, like, hey, we're learning this together. We're doing this together. Let's figure it out together. This is a new situation for all of us. And let's like make it through the best we can. And then I learned a lot from my first in terms of like, I was better at identifying those cries for my second. I was better at being more confident at figuring out just like a whole variety of different approaches when she was crying. And I think that's like the piece that I took away from those like very early stages.
I appreciate that. And it's funny because a lot of the things that I've heard you and Jason already say in this first 10 minutes, you know, you replaced the word baby with member of my team, and the conversation still makes perfectly sense. Jason, let me open the floor for you here.
Well, it's interesting what Allison was just saying, because I used to talk about this with the baby stage, which is you're basically doing real-time debugging. You're sitting there and you're like, you know, well, I don't know what's happening. Let's figure this out, right? Are you hungry? Are you tired? Do your diaper need to be changed? All that sort of stuff. And you can start eliminating things. One of the things that I talk about with my son, so I have two kids on the spectrum, my oldest and my youngest. My oldest, he's quite on the spectrum. And we talk about a lot of things. He's high functioning, but there's a lot of challenges for him in life. One of them is communication. And so one of the things we've been talking about from an early age with him is that communication, talking in particular, is not about him to be heard. It's for the receiver so that he can be understood. So my son can be understood. He needs to talk to me in a way that I can understand what he's trying to convey. And I don't believe that's like how most people think about it. But if you actually think about what you're doing with communication, it's this weird lossy system between two animals that please understand what I'm about to tell you for various reasons and all that sort of stuff. With him, he only says exactly how he would understand something. And it's impenetrable by normal people and like pretty neurotypical folks, and doesn't give context. He gives no non sequitur left and right, all the classic types of things. So we've worked on this for years and he's getting better at it and all that sort of stuff. But this is one of the bigger things that I learned when I was becoming a better engineering manager was I want to say something and I want the organization to understand what I'm about to say. I need to communicate with the organization in multiple different ways. ways so that multiple different communication acceptance pathways will understand this: written, verbal, audio, video, all hands, all the different things. And also I got to try different ways. I got to emote more, emote less, factually more, story more. You get the idea. This is one of the things that I think that when you're raising humans, small humans, and you're working with humans, you have to understand, again, like this information exchange is actually one of the more critical parts of it. And it's not, hey, ISO, hey, Allison, I'm about to say something and I want you to understand me, so I'm going to say it my way. It's, hey, ISO, hey, Allison, this is important. I want you to understand me. So I'm going to try to put this so that you all can pick it up and reframe it. Because imagine what that's actually happening in the moment. As I'm saying something, I got a picture in my head. You're picking up these weird signals and trying to recreate this whole thing in your head. It's weird. It's super weird. And if you think about it with kids, it changes over the spectrum too. A 5-year-old is different than a 15-year-old, is different than a 25-year-old with their ability to do both the accepting of the information and the projecting of the information.
Yeah.
And I think here the 5-year-old versus the 25-year-old can be perfectly mapped to the inexperienced engineer or inexperienced engineering leader to the experienced one. There's so many gaps in how we communicate that need to be filled so much more for someone who is an audience that's less experienced than for one that is.
This is an interesting point that I get called out on a couple of times by some of the folks who report to me at GitHub. It's interesting when I put it in this context too, because right now my youngest is 9. And if you put me back literally right now in the moment in a situation where I had 2 under 2s, it would actually be a struggle for me because it's a consecutive pathway. As you grow in it with them, you're in the moment, you're in the context, you have all this stuff. It would be a struggle for me. I'd adapt to it again. I have the experience to do that. But when I was at GitHub, I remember Sam Lambert is the one who actually, he now runs Planet Scale. He's the one who called me out on this, said, hey, you can't talk to junior engineers anymore. It's a weird thing for you to be able to communicate with junior engineers. All these basic concepts or these basic premises or things that you've already constructed, you've adapted to this level. You actually, it's very difficult for you to do that. And unless you want to put in the effort, I suggest you not do that anymore. I suggest you talk to the mids or the seniors and then have them do that way. And I thought it was interesting because I was like, I never really thought about it that way. But yeah, I was being ineffective communicating with them because I forgot what it was like to be a junior engineer at that stage and all the different things that were going on. And this also went with first-time managers. It was a little bit more struggle for me to speak because I had an expectation about what they knew that was mismatched from what they knew. And it was too far for me to do that. On my daily basis was not talking to first-time managers.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because what they say with younger kids to talk less, right? Like figure out how to use fewer words. I find that when I'm having conversations, sometimes especially my younger one, even my older one, they just have trouble parsing what I'm saying unless I'm really focused in how I'm communicating it. For them, it's where their brains are at. It's that it takes them longer processing time. But as an engineering leader, there's a piece of that as well, right? How can I take my verbose communication and make it more succinct? What is the information that everybody must have? What's the nice to have information? And what's the people that want all the details and want to know exactly how the sausage is made, like what's all the extra bits that I can throw in for them? And I find that happens in conversations with my kids too, right? Like how can I make the message really clear and concise for what they need to know or what we need to talk about? And then if they want to continue the conversation or it goes further, then adding more context. And sometimes our conversations go in wild places because they're children. And then I give them all the how the sausage is made and all the details and all the different directions.
Adapting this again to two different worlds. There's something that my wife and I have done, I don't know, maybe the last couple of years with our oldest, and then we're adapting it to the younger ones too, which is one, we do speak less. We don't try to over-explain. Like that's a bad situation in general. But what we've adapted to is something that I started to do at work a lot more, maybe 10 years ago, and it was natural to bring it over here too, is instead of answering all of the questions, I would say, here's a question I would try to answer. If I was in your situation, here's what I might be asking. So why don't you go look at this or go research that? And that actually works really well in most situations with folks who care about their jobs, and they'll figure out and they can go do that. It leads them down to exploratory paths that even you might not have done, and they can come back with more information. And it works well with older kids too, particularly ones that have access to some information systems if you allow them on the internet and stuff. But you say, oh, that's interesting, buddy. I really like the way you're thinking about that. I might go ask these two questions or try to explore this topic, and then let that also roll around with you for a little bit and then come back with you. Obviously, it doesn't work with younger kids as much, but the premise is similar.
Yeah, I think that brings up a good point too of fostering independence, right? And so this is also with kids and with first-time managers or first less experienced engineers that are growing. What are those milestones and steps where you can push them towards, instead of doing the thing for them or myself being responsible for the thing, switching it with support so that they're now responsible for it? For example, at the beginning of this year, my son is in second grade, and so we wanted him to have more responsibility over getting out of the house in the morning, and he can read now. And so we have a list next to the door with the things that he needs in order to get out of the house. We could probably do the same thing with my younger one if we used pictures. We just haven't done that yet. But right, it's like we took a step back and we're like, okay, I am still, my husband and I, as we're getting out of the house, we are still the person responsible for asking the questions, for saying, do you have your backpack? Do you have your lunch? Do you have your jacket? How can we foster that independence so that we're like, do you have everything that you need for the day? Great, let's go. And so I think it's the same with men. You are giving them more and more responsibility with support, with encouragement, and with systems that really help them succeed in doing that.
We found that when raising our kids, and I find this to be absolutely true inside companies, particularly when you talk about culture, is the style and the manner in which you try to get something done matters a lot. And ultimately, this becomes, you might want to say like family cohesion, but it becomes culture. So I'm just going to break them up into two very, there's a lot of them, but I'm just going to break them into two. One is like a consequence-based structure and a reward-based structure. And I was basically raised in a consequence-based structure. You don't do this, you go on timeout. You don't do this, you lose this thing. And my wife and I both were raised that way, but we also think that we were parenting that way for quite some time. What we realized was, particularly with our kids, maybe unique to our kids, but I don't think it is true because I see it in the companies too. You go to a reward-based system or some sort of accomplishment-based system, and all of a sudden things change. Hey, here's what we do for family movie night. The snacks are a privilege. Here's how you earn your snacks for family movie night. You do your chores, or, oh, we're going to get to go to do this, assuming that all of these things are done. That's the reward for doing this. And it changes the behavior, changes their own ownership over this. And I think the same thing's true inside corporations. You could say, you don't do this, you're fired. But you say, hey, this is what it means to be a high achiever here this way, or that sort of thing. And each person might be motivated differently. But the point being that, like, how you structure that and communicate that will also dictate outcome.
It's interesting because the consequence-based to reward-based, I come across very often that first-time managers or just people more junior naturally believe that being a leader means consequence-based instead of actually reward-based, which feels to me almost counterintuitive, because when the moment you spend 5 minutes with someone and say, hey, are you going to be motivated in an environment where we're all excited and we work as a team and we are going to achieve this big thing and have this reward at the end, versus do you want to be in a place where if you don't do this, then, you know, X happens. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Allison and Jason, if you see that there is, yes, some link there.
That's a good question. I don't know. And it's interesting because with my kids, we do both like rewards and consequences. It's a little bit on a spectrum. And it also depends on our child. Like our son is like very not rewards driven and very consequence driven. And our daughter does not care about consequences. Like she has made up her mind, whatever she's going to do, she has made up her mind and she is willing to accept whatever the result is from that decision. But she is very, like, very rewards motivated. And so I think it's interesting because it's maybe like a mix of both. We talk a lot about choices and results of those choices, which is sometimes like a different way of saying consequences, but not always, right? I think it takes the language out of rewards, consequences, and we're sort of like, okay, what's the choice? We actually just on 2 days ago had a big conversation with our son about trust and lying. And there was a situation that came up that we were addressing. And we were talking to him about, based on actions, what the short-term results and what the long-term results of that might be. And, you know, it was like, we broke it down because it's a little like high level for a seven-year-old. But it is really, we talk a lot about, okay, what are the actions that you're taking? And what do you think the results of those actions are going to be? I don't know if that's a new manager. I think that experienced manager knows how to do that more skillfully, right? It's similar to the coaching versus mentoring piece. Like usually newer managers, they can mentor really well, but it takes them a while to figure out how to coach. So I think that it's not ability or what they fall to, but just like the ease that it comes to them with.
I think that there's almost like a recognition that you use each one of those things as a tool. And speaking specifically for management at this point too, each one of those things is a tool used appropriately in time. If you only have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So you only go one way. But as an example, like coaching athletes, we've talked about a lot of sports metaphors in the past. Some athletes only respond to a certain type of coaching. Some of it can't, you can't, maybe they're not confident enough, they're young enough or whatever. You need to motivate them more. Some only respond to the negative, the yelling coaching. And I think those people, particularly when they're younger, are few. Maybe when they're older, because of habits they formed when they were younger, might be more. But the point being that you can use both. So a good example would be like, you're sitting in a room with all your senior folks, you're running out of runway in a company, which is unfortunately 2022 and going into 2023, this common thing. It's very difficult to find a rewards-based thing. Is like, you have to sit there in the moment and say, we don't hit this milestone, we're done as a business. Like, flat out done. And now that's not a negative. You should talk about that. You should have that conversation. And it's appropriate in that moment to have that conversation. Whereas you flip it and you say to an individual, you don't hit this milestone and you're fired, but that type of thing, that might work for some and it may completely fall apart for others. You have to know that individual in that moment too. We always like to talk about Jobs and Musks of the world and others who basically from the outside could be perceived to only have one method of doing this. And they're highly successful at it. And I would say that one, none of us have the luxury of being the richest person on earth who literally has no consequences in life whatsoever and no accountability. And Steve Jobs, who was famously fired from his own company because of how bad he was at the job and had to relearn all these things and come back and be a different version of him. Ultimately, that was successful. And we lose sight of those two things in those two situations. And management is a lot more about what we're talking about here on this podcast for 99.9999% of all people who are going to do the job.
Yeah. And there are triggers as well, right? Like performance improvement plans. It's very likely that by the time somebody gets to a performance improvement plan, you've talked about the rewards. You've done that route, right? Like in our house, it is anything that is safety related is like automatic, like consequence system. Like we are not talking about rewards for not running into the street. Like it is a consequence if you like dart out into a parking lot without a grown up next to you thing. So I think there are triggers, right? And this is ideally the way that I handle these things. But sometimes we have to go, like we have to do the thing that we don't love doing, but is a necessity of where we're at the moment.
Yep, I think that's a perfect frame of it too, which is, here's a very concrete example on the children's side. My son has this habit and he just can't seem to break it, which is if we ask him to do something, safety, we actually have the exact same structure, which is you do this, it goes. But my son, he asked why. I say, hey, buddy, go clean your room. Why? Nope, we have set up for this past 2 years. If you ask why without doing it first, you have to do it, then you're allowed to ask why. And because of the context with him, if he asks why without doing the thing, it's automatic, some automatic consequence. And the reason why is because we had this conversation thousands of times and we've talked about this. And so it's his lack of adaptation and his lack of accepting it. And so it's an automatic rule. The girls don't have the same thing because that's not their thing that they're struggling with.
Yeah. Which I think comes to one of the other things that I think overlaps a lot is just like setting and communicating clear expectations.
Yeah.
Right. And because our children like know, and it's funny, my husband and I, we keep each other in check because sometimes we'll jump to a something we always give a warning or be like, okay, here's your choice. And sometimes if we're in a mode where we're maybe a little short tempered or things are a little more difficult, we'll jump immediately past that step. And the other one will be like, you didn't give the warning. You got to give the warning first. And so that's the same. And I've found that just in a variety of situations, right? If you can communicate, like, what is the thing that we're trying to do together? What is my expectation? My son has recently started doing drop-off play dates where he will go to someone's house and we always recap. What is the expectation of your behavior when you are in someone else's home? But it's like making sure the expectations are clear, reinforcing them, repeating them, not just me saying them, but me asking, do you remember what the expectations are? Tell me what they are. And I think also with leadership, there is a lot of, is there confusion because I haven't made the expectation clear? Like how have I, like what Jason was saying earlier, also about having to communicate it in a variety of ways. Like how has it been communicated? Have I heard it back from folks to like really know that they understand and have thought about it? There's all those sort of different checkpoints also of making expectations clear.
Two things I want to say, because I think this is a great topic. One is the hearing back is critical I think, to a lot of these situations. So in our son's case, because he's on the spectrum, executive function is something that he struggles with in general. So now my wife and I have become these pseudo experts in executive function. But if you actually see this play out in corporations, you see it too. Hey, buddy, we're leaving at 3 o'clock. That's not quite enough for us to trust him that he's going to do it. He has to play back to us all the steps that lead up to 3 o'clock. You can use this trick a lot with work. And I don't think it should be considered a trick. It should be an expectation. Like, all right, we need to achieve this on 6 months from now. Break it down for me. What's it going to look like? And this is also commonly why every project is green until it's red 2 weeks before it's supposed to be due, is because we as an organization lack the executive function to go break that all down. But one thing I'll say too, as a parent, there's this one book or one concept that we use with the kids when they were super young, which worked really well for us as parents, in particular, because sometimes we would get short. I believe the book was called 1-2-3 Magic or something along those lines, which was it's a very simple concept, which is, hey, if you're in the moment, it's just one. And you don't say anything else. It's just like something's going wrong. You basically train the kids to understand one. And then they keep flailing or saying something, two, keep going, three. That's the timeout right there. That's the pull them away. And it doesn't take long. The kids running around the yard screaming, hitting somebody else, one. Oh, I'm going to keep doing it, two. All right, dad's serious here. We're going to shut it down.
I like it. I want to flip the questions a little bit too. How do you believe being inside corporations and being inside businesses has changed you in your parenting? What have you taken the other way around?
That's interesting. One of the things that I got really bad at and then I had to get good at was just the amount of emotional bandwidth that I had in a day, and like making sure that, especially in more difficult situations like promotion season, reorgs, things like that, where you are talking to a lot of people and you're putting a lot of emotional energy into your workday. And there was a point where I just had like nothing left in the tank at the end of the day for my family, which is really hard because we go into pick up dinner bedtime, which like on the best days is like a little chaotic, right? And so just realizing what that emotional bandwidth looks like and how I need to like organize my work days and what my boundaries were to make sure that I had enough left at the end of the day to have a great conversation at dinner with my kids or deal with the random meltdown because they were like just a little too tired to make it from dinner to bedtime. But on that super thin line that you need to make that transition, and recognizing the ways in which work can drain you in similar ways to being a parent can drain you, and understanding that it's all pulling from the same bucket.
Literally, I was going to say the exact same thing, which was that my wife said something. This was, we've talked about some of my personal darker days pre-acquisition at GitHub when the CEO wasn't around. There's a lot of things falling apart and just trying to hold it all together, and like the hours I was spending and also on the road and stuff like that. And my wife said something, which is, because also when you're home, she can hear through the door. And she said, we don't get that version of you at home on a regular basis. And it was because I had nothing else, you know, at that point. And that was like devastating to hear. You're like, oh, you're right. That's something I got to work on. So I got to find a way to do that. And that might mean less of a thing in the moment too. But that was something that I really took, which was I have to be that person at home all the time. And I was pre and post. It's just in a moment. That was something you never want to hear, frankly. And you have to work at that. I would say something else I did take away personally though too, is that I think that I expected, this is going to sound very strange, very strange. I think I expected more out of my kids than I did some people that I worked with at one point, because your kids, you hope, are almost mini versions of you and your wife and what you know where you are and what that might look like. You don't know, so you don't expect, but you learn from the other people, and then you raise those expectations as you learn more, all that sort of stuff. With the kids, what I found was I was expecting them to be where I was at 35 or 40, or to understand what I might be doing at 10, even though they're individual kids and they're not me. And that was different. So I had to flip it around and say, well, who are you? And what is important to you? Learn about them on a regular basis too. And that was something I really pushed myself on for a couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with that also in the what makes someone tick, right? There was some of that from parenting, but a lot of it was just working with different people, different personality types. I am a very goals-based, goals-driven person, right? I'm like, okay, I'm here. These are the things I want to learn by the end of this year that I want to get exposure to by the end of the year. This is how I'm going to get there. This is what my milestones are going to be. I'm going to communicate that with my manager and my peers. That is just, I work and run in that system. And there were a lot of folks that reported to me or that I worked worked with that didn't, I think that it helped me understand the ways in which, because my children, especially my son, is a lot like me. And so in the ways that he isn't like me, so working with lots of different people with lots of different strengths and growth areas and what motivated them and just having to practice that a lot, I think helped me with my kids figure out like different way to ask questions, different ways to approach the outcomes that we were going for. So it's like the kids helped the people, but also I got a lot of practice at work with a lot more people than just my two children. And so I could bring that variety back.
Did you ever find yourself on a day where you just had that meeting and you realized you're having the same thing, but with your kids? You know what I mean? Like you've just gone and dug in with that report and you're actually realizing you're having essentially the same version of the, or different version of the same conversation with your 10-year-old or 7-year-old.
I don't think I've had one of those conversations where it feels that stark. I think it was more like my own, the mannerisms by which I would achieve outcomes. We'll go back to that, which is, hey, how I engage, so it's the content of the conversations never felt that way. But it was, okay, so I need to listen. This is a conversation where I need to 100% listen. Okay, so no, I need to, this is an expectations conversation, or this is a consequence correction conversation, like that sort of stuff. And we have a big bucket for managing and a big bucket for parenting. But in effect, I think what Allison was saying before, you boil down the parenting books, boil down the management books, they're actually the same concepts, which are, at the end of the day, that's what the realization was. And again, like when it came to the two kids on the spectrum, particularly my son, it was, oh, this is with my son, it almost felt like I was talking to an opaque org, as opposed to my daughters. It was like I had an individual, my son, I had to engage almost like it was, I had to figure, like I was impenetrable. I had to use 15 different communication pathways and expect no information to come back to me because he doesn't communicate. So that's like what it means to be an executive half the time is like you put it all this information, zero comes back. So you've got to figure out other methods to get this information from them.
I'm going to hijack the last couple of minutes of this episode to give some advice to what is for sure not just the engineering leader that I mentioned earlier that I'm working with, but is others who are about to become a first-time parent. You've shared a lot of things, a lot of techniques, but if you could go back to the moment in your career right before you became a parent, what do you wish you had done? And is it, I wish I would have taken more time off. I wish I would have not been that exhausted at the end of the day. I didn't have things left in my tank. And actually, in this case, it's not just for him because I have both of them, the mother and the father working with me here. So Allison and Jason, maybe you can give a parent perspective and maybe so a mother and father's perspective of how you wish maybe what you did or how you maybe wish you would have done something different in that moment in time. Because it is one of the most important moments for anyone's life when they get, if this is something they want to experience.
Yeah, I think it's try to figure out what you need and ask for it. There's a lot that leaders can do to support parents, especially new parents. For me, there was a very stark difference. When I had my first, I was at a company that had 4 weeks of parental leave, which as the birthing partner is extraordinarily difficult. I was able to convince them to let me go like 6 weeks and then part-time for a few weeks, but it was in no way enough time. And I would say that when my son was 5 months, we had some early childcare that fell through. So I was working and taking care of him during the day, which was just, again, it's fine sometimes if you have a baby that like naps a lot and is pretty chill. And those were not my children. But my second, I was at GitHub, which has a tremendous parental leave policy. And so I was able to take a number of months right off the bat and then actually save. You can use it, at least when I was there, you could use it any time in the first year. So I used a chunk right off the bat and then a little bit in the middle when I felt like things would probably be chaotic and my house would be falling apart a little bit. And then a little bit at the end when just before that year mark where it's a little bit more enjoyable and it's okay, we're gonna just have some fun like time together. And I, when my son was about 5 months, like those were some really dark days of parenting and working in tech for me. I was the first woman on my team. I was the only mom that had ever been on the team. It was just, actively sought out. There wasn't as much of a conversation as well about being a parent in tech. People weren't talking about it, especially moms. And I like went out on a hunt, on a search for moms in tech because I just like desperately needed the support and desperately needed to know that like I could stay in the industry and I could do it. And so I think taking the time, figuring out what you need, finding those networks and asking for it is important. And I will say, especially for are birthing mothers who also may be nursing. You add a whole new paradigm also with nursing and pumping, and that in itself is like a whole bucket of really difficult logistics. So finding those networks and those support structures and asking for what you need.
I'll echo exactly what Allison said, but then I'm on the dad side. So all three of my kids were born in places where there was no parental leave for the dad. So I had zero time I could take off in those situations. And it was weird to have to go to work the next day when my wife was home. So I did take off a couple of weeks in each situation, unpaid and several. But what I didn't recognize until later is that GitHub's policy, which was you could take some time off and you could chunk it up into the first year, is actually what we should all theoretically be doing because of the way that things will change over the first year. And we didn't recognize this. My wife didn't even, obviously, as a birthing partner until she was pumping on her drive to the hospital for her residency because she couldn't take any more time off. And she would just have to stop whatever she was doing in the middle of the day to continue to pump and bring it home at night. And we're like doing all this stuff. And it's just like, it was weird. You look at it 15 years later, what was that all about? That was weird. And I would say this, I give this advice to all people that come to me post, obviously this, you know, have the experience, but it's in general, which is I've had this thought. I always talk about like my 75-year-old moments, which are what will matter to me when I'm 75. And so I had somebody come to me once and said, hey, my wife's going through something. They reported to me. And then they said, I don't know if I want to take time off. And I was like, we're not even having this conversation. You're going to go takes time off. Like, obviously, we'll cover for you. And I don't even want to hear from you for at least 3 weeks. And then we can have another conversation about this. And I said, what will matter in 5 years? It's not whatever project you're on in the moment right now. It'll be fine. That will matter to you, how you react in the moment. And you have to take that into consideration. And it's incredibly important that people think that way, because in the moment, everything feels so urgent and vastly important. But if you went back and thought about all those important projects you were working on, you could always have stepped away for a week or two. In almost every situation, it would have been fine. It's so rare to find a situation where even if the head person can't step away for some small amount of time to go do something. The last thing I'll say too is, as a parent, I was one of those, my very first, I was literally the person who would go check on whether or not he was breathing every night for like several times a night. And my wife, just go to bed, he's fine. I'm like, I heard something, I want to go check. And like that sort of thing. And my wife just said, we've been doing this for hundreds of thousands of years and it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine, that sort of thing. And it's important to hear, because at some point you sit there and there's no doctor or nurse. You take the baby home and you're like, oh wait, I'm an adult now. That's a thing, like I'm responsible for another human being. And that's a weird thing in the moment. And it can be a little unnerving. In my case, it wasn't so much unnerving in the fact that like I was responsible for somebody. It was like, I don't know what this means. I've never been responsible to this degree for someone else. And so you're over indexing, but ultimately it's fine. You will be fine. They will be fine. Allison said earlier, hey, I'm new to this. You're new to this. We'll figure it out together type of deal.
Yeah. And I'll just add that if you are in this situation, especially as a new parent or thinking about parenting, and you look at your work day or your work week or month and you can't step away, I would say that's a really good indication of figure out systems or structures or changes that need to be put in place so that you can. You children, right? Like, you just never know what's going to happen and when you're going to need to step away, or when, you know, school's going to be closed a random day, or someone's going to be sick, or something's going to happen. And so it also, I think, forces you to put in place better structures where like you aren't the bottleneck and you're also enabling people to do more so that you can step away and you can feel like you can step away when needed.
I appreciate this so much, both of you. And Allison, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a fantastic episode to record. And I recently got some feedback. I was on a call by chance to some of our listeners I didn't know. And they said, look, the episodes that you guys do that are the ones that touch closest to our emotions, to our lives, to the things that are not as obvious, are the ones that like have helped me the most. And I absolutely know this is going to be one of those. So it's been a pleasure having you with us today, Allison. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Developing Leadership. Make sure you subscribe to follow us on our journey to more meaningful engineering leadership. If you have any challenges or topics you would like us to explore in an upcoming episode, tweet or DM us at devleadership_ on Twitter. To learn more about data-enabled engineering and how metrics can help your teams and improve your processes, go to athenian.com. See you in 2 weeks for another episode of Developing Leadership.